Welcome, everyone, to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a really interesting topic, one that, well, often gets presented as a strength, you know? Perfectionism. We've all heard it, maybe even said it in job interviews, right? My biggest weakness. Oh, I'm just too much of a perfectionist. Ooh, it sounds good. It suggests attention to detail, high standards, maybe even the secret sauce for success.
Exactly. It has this glossy image.
But here's the thing we're going to unpack today, the surprising truth. Underneath that shine, perfectionism. It's got some serious downsides. One of our sources, The Guardian, actually called it a kind of psychological fascism.
Wow, that's strong language.
It is, and it said it drains your world of color, light, spontaneity, and joy. Like an internal dictator really stifling you.
That really captures the paradox, doesn't it? Something seemingly commendable on the outside, but potentially really damaging internally. So our deep dive today is all about getting under the hood of that. We want to explore some core questions like, why do we even develop it? What's it really telling us about ourselves, about our well-being? And maybe most importantly, how can we start to dismantle it? How do we find a healthier way?
Yeah, that's the goal. And we've really dug into a fascinating stack of sources you provided, everything from mental health articles, personal stories, to some pretty solid psychological research. Our mission really is to pull out the key nuggets, the most important insights to help you navigate this whole perfectionism thing. Okay, so first things first, let's get clear on what we're actually talking about. What is perfectionism, really? It's more than just wanting to do a good job, right?
Absolutely. That's the critical distinction. It's not just about having high standards or striving for excellence. It's really defined by a couple of core things. First, setting what some sources call sky-high standards for yourself. Think unrealistically ambitious. And then this is key, being extremely hard on yourself when you don't meet them. Lots of harsh critical self-talk. And it goes deeper. It gets to the point where your actual self-worth becomes, you know, almost entirely based on whether you can achieve these relentless, often impossible standards.
That really clarifies it. That link between achieving impossible standards and your entire self-worth, it makes total sense why it's so problematic. And it brings up something I read about called perfectionary paralysis. Have you come across that?
Oh, yes. That's a very real phenomenon.
It's where the desire for flawlessness gets so extreme that you just stop. You can't move forward. Maybe you even ditch the whole task because it won't be perfect. Kind of ironic, isn't it? Striving for perfection leads to doing nothing.
It is deeply ironic. And it really highlights the rigidity of the perfectionist mindset. It's the complete opposite of what, you know, a healthy pursuit of excellence looks like. True excellence is usually driven by enthusiasm, maybe passion. You set high standards, sure, but they're realistic.
Achievable.
Exactly. And crucially, you see mistakes as, well, opportunities to learn, not catastrophes. The outcome is genuine satisfaction, a sense of accomplishment, not just relief from anxiety. It's about being determined, yes, but also flexible. One path leads to growth, the other often just leads to burnout and self-criticism.
Okay, so that contrast is clear. Now let's get into the really fascinating part, I think. Where does this relentless drive actually come from, especially thinking about our early lives?
Yeah, this is where it gets really interesting. A lot of it, surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, can often be traced back to adverse childhood experiences or ACEs. Sources like Psychology Today talk about how disruptions in that early child caregiver attachment can really lead to damaged self-esteem, that deep-seated feeling of not being good enough.
So experiences with caregivers are pretty fundamental then?
Very often, yes. You might see perfectionists who had parents or caregivers who were maybe highly critical, rejecting, made them feel inadequate. Or maybe love and approval felt conditional, like conditional on performance, on achieving things.
Oh, okay. Love wasn't just freely given.
Precisely. And we even saw this reflected in a personal story from Reddit. Someone mentioned making a subconscious decision to be perfect just to get attention because their sibling was very outgoing and got noticed more easily.
Wow. That really shows how those early family dynamics can plant the seeds.
Absolutely. And these experiences lead to certain thought patterns taking root in childhood. Things like, my worth equals my work, or people will only love me if I'm perfect, or the really damaging belief that making mistakes is awful.
So those core beliefs get set early on, but it's not just about what happened at home, is it? What about wider pressures, society?
No, you're spot on. It's definitely not just the home environment. We also have to look at societal and external pressures. There's this concept called socially prescribed perfectionism. Basically, it's feeling like you need to meet the expectations of others whether those expectations are real or just perceived in order to be accepted.
Okay, so feeling pressure from the outside.
Right. And there's some compelling research on this. One study, for instance, showed how experiences of racial discrimination could lead to this kind of perfectionism in African-American teens. They perceive they don't meet other standards because of discrimination, which then unfortunately links to increased depressive symptoms. It's a heavy burden.
That's a really powerful example of external factors.
And then, of course, there's social media. It's hard to ignore its role.
Oh, yeah. The comparison trap.
Totally. One source called it a place where the currency is envy. You're constantly scrolling through curated, seemingly perfect lives.
Mm.
And that constant comparison, well, it can really fuel feelings of inadequacy, making you feel like you're falling short. It makes you wonder, are we kind of training ourselves for perfectionism just by being online?
It's a scary thought.
Now, on more angle here,
yeah.
Sometimes perfectionism isn't about feeling inadequate about yourself, but feeling insecure about the world. Life feels chaotic, unpredictable, so striving for perfection in your own little sphere becomes a way to try and gain a sense of control.
Ah, interesting. Control is the driver.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've explored the roots, childhood, society, control. Now, how does this actually play out? What are the real-world impacts on our mental health, our relationships, even our physical selves?
Well, the impacts are pretty extensive, unfortunately. They really cast a long shadow. If we start with mental and emotional health, the connection is strong and, frankly, concerning. Multiple sources describe perfectionism as a slippery slope to stress, anxiety, and even depression.
A slippery slope. Yeah, I can see that.
That constant pressure means that when mistakes inevitably happen, because they will happen, the anxiety can feel, as one source put it, like a loaded gun, just waiting to go off.
Wow.
And this often feeds into relentless overthinking. And that perfectionary paralysis we talked about earlier, that can totally shut down decision-making, which, you guessed it, just ramps up the stress and anxiety even more.
It sounds like a vicious cycle.
It really is. The fear of failure is huge for perfectionists. It's often viewed as absolutely catastrophic, not just inconvenient or a learning opportunity. And this is a major contributor to things like generalized anxiety disorder.
And you mentioned earlier that feeling of not being good enough, even when successful. That relates to imposter syndrome, doesn't it?
Spot on. That's a really common and confusing piece of the puzzle, the imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
You can have highly accomplished people. We saw a comment from a surgeon on Reddit, incredibly skilled, who still feel like they're just pretending to be perfect, that their success is down to pure luck.
Despite all the evidence to the contrary.
Exactly. And this constant striving, this feeling of being a fraud, often means chronically neglecting your own emotional needs, which down the line sets you up for long-term challenges. And looking at the bigger mental health picture, perfectionism isn't just linked to anxiety and depression. It can worsen conditions like OCD, various eating disorders, especially anorexia nervosa and body dysmorphic disorder.
Mm.
And tragically, studies show it's a significant risk factor for suicide. That's how serious this can be.
That's incredibly sobering. And these impacts, they don't just stay internal, right? They must affect relationships, too.
Oh, absolutely. The ripple effect is significant. Perfectionism can genuinely ruin personal relationships.
Mm.
Think about it. You're setting these incredibly high, often unrealistic expectations, not just for yourself, but for your interactions with others. This inevitably creates unnecessary tension.
Yeah, that sounds tough to be around.
It can be.
Yeah.
And it often leads to social disconnection. The person trying so hard to appear flawless can come across as aloof, maybe inauthentic.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, this effort to avoid judgment or rejection can actually push people away, leading to exactly the outcome they feared most.
Wow. Okay, so mental health, relationships.
Yeah.
What about productivity? Because intuitively, you'd think perfectionists would be super productive.
That's the great irony, isn't it? It often has the opposite effect. Perfectionism is a major driver of procrastination.
Really? Procrastination?
Yes. Not out of laziness, but out of that intense fear that the results won't meet your impossibly high standards. So it feels safer not to start. It also really limits personal growth.
Mm.
You get trapped in this rigid mindset, terrified of mistakes, which makes it incredibly hard to adapt, to learn, to try new things.
Right. You can't learn if you're not willing to stumble a bit.
Precisely. And for anyone in a creative field, oh, it can be absolutely crippling. One writer, Jenna Rainey, described it beautifully. She said, it steals your voice, your momentum, and your joy. It leads to things like endless editing loops, that paralyzing fear of the blank page, and just a constant draining comparison overload.
That sounds exhausting. And I guess all this stress, It must take a physical toll, too.
It definitely does. That chronic stress has to go somewhere, right? It often manifests physically. We're talking things like sleep problems, tension headaches, and some research even links the chronic stress associated with perfectionism to more serious issues like heart disease and potentially even higher mortality rates over the long term.
So it really touches every single part of life, mind, relationships, work, body.
It really does. It's pervasive.
Okay, that's, well, it's a lot. And it paints a pretty challenging picture. But here's the pivot. The good news? You can break free from this. It's possible. It's not about suddenly becoming sloppy or giving up on having standards. It's about shifting from those crushing, relentless ones to, well, healthier ones, standards that actually support you instead of punish you.
That's exactly it. And a really powerful concept here comes from psychoanalysis, actually. Donald Winnicott talked about the good enough mother.
The good enough mother, tell me more.
His idea was that a theoretically perfect mother, one who anticipates and meets every single need instantly, actually hinders the baby's development. It robs the child of the chance to learn, to adapt, to tolerate a little frustration. So good enough, in his view, wasn't settling for second best. It actually meant that perfect is not even desirable. Perfect hinders growth.
Wow, perfect isn't even desirable. That flips the script entirely.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It makes you ask, if perfect isn't even the goal, why are we exhausting ourselves chasing it?
Such a freeing thought. Okay, so if we're ready to let go of that chase, what can we actually do? What are some practical steps to start dismantling this?
Right, let's get practical. A really fundamental first step is to consciously reframe failure. Start seeing mistakes not as proof of your inadequacy, but as learning opportunities.
Yeah.
Try to cultivate more of a matter-of-fact attitude. Ask yourself honestly, what's the big deal if I make a mistake here? What can I learn? This comes up again and again in the sources.
Shifting that internal narrative about mistakes, that seems huge. What else? How do we treat ourselves during this process?
Hand in hand with reframing failure comes cultivating self-compassion. This is crucial. It means actively treating yourself with kindness, understanding, and self-compassion, especially when you do fall short or make a mistake. There's a practice from Kristen Neff that's really helpful. You acknowledge the moment. This is a moment of suffering. You normalize it. Suffering is part of life. And then you offer kindness. May I bring kindness to this moment? May I give myself the compassion I need?
That sounds really powerful, like actively comforting yourself.
It is. It changes your internal landscape.
Yeah.
Then, practically speaking, set realistic and smart goals. SMART stands for specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. That A for achievable. That's gold for recovering perfectionists. Make sure your goals are actually reachable.
Not setting yourself up to fail before you start.
Exactly. And maybe even more actively, practice failing and embracing imperfection. One Reddit user suggested deliberately doing things I am not good at and just laughing about it.
Oh.
Or if you're creative, Jenna Rainey suggests literally working with a mistake, letting an odd brushstroke or a weird shape become part of the piece, make it interesting.
Leaning into the imperfection.
Yes. Remembering that imperfections are a normal part of being human. And as another course said, creativity is messy. You have to allow for the mess.
I love that idea of intentional imperfection. What about those outside pressures, like the social media comparisons we talked about?
Yeah, you have to address those too. It's vital to limit comparisons and probably your social media usage. Focus on your own journey, your personal growth, not the highlight reel of others. Multiple sources stress how social media creates this intense pressure to achieve unrealistic goals.
So maybe a digital detox or at least some conscious limits.
Could be really helpful. And alongside that, consciously prioritize your mental health and set boundaries. This means actually setting goals for rejuvenation, scheduling time for exercise, sleep, hobbies, things that recharge you to fight burnout, and learning to ask for what you need, maybe learning to delegate sometimes, and setting clear boundaries about your time and energy. That's key.
Taking care of the whole self, not just the achieving self. So it sounds like we need to shift our internal talk, our goals, how we handle mistakes, our external inputs. How do we actually redefine what success means if it's not about being flawless?
That's a great question. You redefine it from the inside out. Consider the definition from legendary coach John Wooden. He defines success as the satisfaction in knowing that you've done your best. Not about the final score or the external validation. It's about your effort and integrity.
Peace of mind from knowing you gave your best effort.
Exactly. Detaching your worth from the outcome. And related to that, actively challenge that perfectionist thinking. Become aware of those rigid, all-or-nothing thought patterns, and then question them. Ask, is this thought actually true? Is it helpful? Replace them with more positive and realistic thoughts. One simple tool someone mentioned was asking, will this matter in 5 years? Puts things in perspective.
That five-year question is good. Okay, anything else foundational?
Yes, perhaps the most foundational thing. Recognize your inherent worth. As Psychology Today puts it, your worth as a person is given at birth. It comes with unlimited potential. Your performance, your achievements, or lack thereof, they neither add to nor detract from that fundamental inner worth.
You are worthy just because you exist, basically.
Essentially, yes. As one Reddit user said, tell yourself, you are your own best friend. Love yourself. Take care of yourself. That self-acceptance is key. Now, all these strategies are incredibly useful. They can create real, meaningful change. But sometimes perfectionism is really deeply rooted. If you try these things and still feel stuck, or if the anxiety or depression is severe, please know that professional help is absolutely available and can be incredibly effective.
That's such an important point. These aren't necessarily easy fixes.
No, they take practice and sometimes support. Therapies like cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, can help you directly challenge and change those thought patterns. Acceptance and commitment therapy, ACT, helps you focus on your values and act in line with them, even with difficult feelings. There are good pathways to get support.
Good to know there are options if self-help isn't quite enough. So bringing this all together, the core message seems to be that perfectionism, despite its shiny reputation, is often this really heavy burden we place on ourselves. But the hopeful part is we do have the power to shift out of that toxic loop, as one source called it, and into, well, a more delicious life.
Absolutely. Remember, being less than perfect is not only okay, it's actually healthier for you. That's a direct quote we saw. And choosing done over perfect, as Jenna Rainey said, it's not just about lowering standards, it's liberating. It allows your work, your life to get better, not because it's suddenly flawless, but because it's finally full of life.
Full of life, not drained of it. That's a powerful shift. It's amazing how much energy we can pour into chasing something that, as you said, might not even be desirable in the first place. So maybe a final thought for everyone listening, building on that idea of authentic expression. Maya Angelou once beautifully said, a bird doesn't sing because it has an answer, it sings because it has a song. What is your song, really? The one you'd sing if you weren't burdened by needing it to be flawless? We really encourage you to think about that and maybe start embracing your own unique imperfect melody. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive.